Okay, well, good morning. It might not surprise you to learn that we're going to be looking at the story of Joseph. It is, isn't it? I mean, for him, it took 13 years, so, That's it. Just like to read a few verses to you from Genesis chapter 42. It's verses 25 and 26. This is what it says. Joseph gave orders to fill their bags with grain and to put each man's silver back in his sack and to give them provisions for the journey. After this was done for them, they loaded the grain on their donkeys and they left. Just to sort of refresh your mind, what had happened is the brothers had come to Egypt because of the famine. Joseph had recognized them, was very upset, and it tells us in the text of Genesis that he spoke harshly to them. He accused them of being spies. They said they weren't, and they were in prison for 3 days. At the end of 3 days, what happened was that Joseph said, okay, we're going to take one of the brothers, he chose Simeon, and it tells us that he bound him in front of their eyes. They saw him being bound up. And he said, he's staying here and he will remain here until you bring back your younger brother. Now, how did they feel about that? It tells us that they loaded the grain on the donkeys and they left. Perhaps there was anxiety. I mean, this is the brother who they brought along with them, and suddenly he's not going home to his family. They're leaving him here. Perhaps there was grief, distress, maybe even anger. You know, who's this person to do this to us? We're totally innocent. Certainly, I'm sure they felt helpless. It was a situation that was completely beyond their control. They were at the mercy of this Egyptian. Well, they presumed he was an Egyptian, but they were at the mercy of this guy who was in charge of everything. And from their point of view, well, he could do anything he wanted with them. You know, he could kill them, he could imprison the lot of them. In fact, at the start, that's what he was actually saying. I'm going to imprison all of you and just send one back. What happened to them was far from what they desired. What happened to them was far from what they wanted. It was certainly far from what they're expecting. They were expecting to turn up, pay the money, collect the grain, and go home. And everything had just fallen apart. They were in the face of an overwhelming situation, and they had no choice but to comply. There was no way they could turn around to Joseph and say, this ain't going to happen. They got no power. They were overwhelmed. They had a situation that was beyond their control, beyond their power, beyond their ability to affect it in any way at all. Don't know whether you've ever done it, but if you ever look at the small print of insurance, it's easier in computers. If they send the documents to you, you can make the print any size you like. So it's not necessarily small print anymore. But quite often in the small print, depending on your insurance company, you'll perhaps come across a phrase called force majeure. Okay? And it literally means, it's French. I'm glad Julie's not here. Perhaps I've sort of mangled the words, but she can't tell me off for that. But it actually means a greater force. And what it's saying in the insurance policy is that we'll cover you for this, 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 and this, except under other circumstances when we won't cover you. And one of those circumstances is force majeure. What they often talk about is a natural disaster. Doesn't happen in this country, but obviously if there's an earthquake, the insurance company say, well, there's nothing we can do about that. So if your house goes, tough, we ain't covering you. Certainly at the moment, there's no chance of it happening in this country, we believe. But it talks about war. It also talks about acts of terrorism. Something that is unforeseen, something that is beyond control, something that's beyond our ability to do anything about it, the insurance company turns around and says, we won't cover you for that. So you might think, well, hang on a minute, what happens if? Well, that's something else. But we can come across situations of an overwhelming catastrophe, something that is beyond our ability to do anything about. Earlier in the week, Julie was talking from Psalm 107 in the WhatsApp group. In Psalm 107, verses 23 to 27, say this. Some went out on the sea in ships. They were merchants on the mighty waters. They saw the works of the Lord, his wonderful deeds in the deep. He spoke and stirred up a tempest that lifted the waves. They mounted up to the heavens and went down to the depths. In their peril, their courage melted away. They reeled and staggered like drunkards. They were at their wits' end. That is force majeure. You know, one time I went on a ferry to a motorcycle rally in Holland. And we went on the overnight ferry from Harwich to the Hook of Holland. It wasn't very good weather going down there. And as we went across, it got rough. And at one point, I was walking on the deck. And it felt almost like you were walking uphill one minute, then downhill the next. People were staggering about on this ferry because it was being moved from side to side. And that's a modern ship. So you can understand why it says they reeled and staggered like drunkards. These people at sea, something totally beyond their control, something they could not affect in any way, shape or form, they're simply in it. Paul, writing in 2 Corinthians 1:8, says this. We don't want you to be uninformed, brothers and sisters, about the troubles we experienced in the province of Asia. We were under great pressure, far beyond our ability to endure, so that we despaired of life itself. The Message version puts it this way. Sorry, missed that. Go on to 2 Corinthians 11:25. It says this. Three times I was beaten with rods, once I was pelted with stones, three times I was shipwrecked and spent a day and a night in the open sea. So the ship actually went down. And he's perhaps clinging on to something that was left of the ship, some sort of wood. And he was in the sea for a day and a night. That's a long time just to be bobbing about waiting to get picked up. There's no AC rescue. It just happens to be if something comes along. We can experience overwhelming circumstances in many situations. Work situations. Redundancy comes. In 2019, I was made redundant. Came out of the nowhere. Bang. You don't have a job here anymore. Turn your world upside down. Shock. Why? What's happened? What's gone wrong? We can have overwhelming situations in relationships, either through a slow deterioration or a sudden change. Problems with personal health. Things that are debilitating, life-changing. Dave had a stroke. Life-changing. One minute, it's one situation, another minute, it's all change. Nothing we can do about it. Perhaps it's a family member. And I'm sure we've all experienced in families and friends the touch of death. Suddenly somebody can, well, just not be there anymore. Sometimes it's a slow deterioration. But sometimes they go out the door and they never come back. Perhaps it's an act of the government, one of these sort of force majeure kind of things. I'm sure you remember the news that came earlier this year. Over the radio, Russia has invaded Ukraine. A sudden change. A build-up, yes, but suddenly things in that land were turned upside down. Sometimes we can experience these overwhelming situations because of faith. In Daniel chapter 3, we read of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. The king says, bow down. They say, no. And they were then met with overwhelming force because the king said, you bow down or you're in the furnace. And there's nothing you can do about it. Daniel himself, through jealousy, the other people who were in the government decided to try and get rid of him. Again, it was beyond his control. And there's many others that we see through the Bible. And it's not just then. I'll give you a modern example of just a few years ago. A guy called Dr. Bernard Randall was a chaplain at a Church of England school. In the summer of 2018, he was aware that an organisation called Educate and Celebrate were due to lead a staff meet training session at the school. He had no objection to some of the things that were being taught, but he considered some of the things were impossible to reconcile with his Christian faith and principles. And also the objects that were stated for the school. Things like, love is love, no matter what or who the object is. Also, there was a point where the staff had to chant, smash heteronormativity. In other words, we're talking about LGBT here. And the staff had to chant that as part of the training session, and he objected. After this training session, one of the children came to him and said, how come we are told we have to accept all this LGB stuff in a Christian school? And in fact, what he did later on is he preached a sermon, basically saying and setting out the principles in the Christian faith, but saying you still have to accept people for who they are. But you can't be forced to be something else. He later received a letter dismissing him for gross misconduct. Not only that, he was labelled a safeguarding risk. He was also reported to prevent the counter-terrorism programme. You think, what? Are you serious? Yes, they were. They were deadly serious. He won his case on appeal, but he received a final written warning on his record because of his stance. And do you know that overall, not only was he labelled a safeguarding risk, the church was labelled a safeguarding risk because of what they believed. So we can meet overwhelming situations simply for standing up for our faith. Today. Now, modern life promotes the idea of control in everyday life. Things happen, we can sort things out. There's so much we can do. There's so much that we can take for granted. And yet we can come so often against natural disasters, force majeure, that smash the apparent control. But we can extend the amount of control that we want to even the situation where I want to be in control of when I die. And I will choose that time. But it's just this facade because we are not in control. But how do we react in these overwhelming situations? How do we react when we are shown to be powerless and the situations that we're in are beyond our control? How do we react when we're caught in a storm, whether it's financial, sickness, or death? How do we react when we stand for something and are overwhelmed as a result? There are many natural reactions to being overwhelmed. We can freeze with fear. Don't know whether you can remember it, but in the Indiana Jones Temple of Doom, he's escaping from the temple, and at one point there's this humongous boulder starts rolling down this corridor towards him. And Indiana Jones, being the man that he is, turns around, runs away, goes through the corridors and what have you. Now, there was a film made, obviously, but then there was a game made about the film. And a friend of mine was working his way through the game, you know, avoiding the arrows and jumping over bits and swinging from vines and whatever. And he got to the place where suddenly this trapdoor opens and this boulder starts to run towards him. Now, obviously, what he was supposed to do was turn around, run down the corridor and whatever. But he actually did what I think in real life a lot of us would do. He just looked at the screen and went, oh! And his character just got squashed flat. He just froze. He just looked at this coming towards him and he couldn't cope with it. He didn't run, didn't turn, do anything. He just froze with fear. And that can be a reaction to an overwhelming force. We might try to run and hide in whatever way we can. Some people look at it and say, oh, well, doesn't matter, doesn't really affect me. I'll just pretend it never happened. Some people can just shrug and move on and say, well, that's life. Some might even go down fighting, as it were. Oh, you're not taking me alive, you know, I'll fight this with everything I've got. But how should we react? Well, the fact of the matter is we can be overwhelmed, but as Christians, it's equally true that we are under God. In Luke 1, 76 to 79, we have the song that Zechariah sang over his unborn child, John the Baptist. This is what he says. And you, my child, will be called a prophet of the Most High, for you will go before the Lord, prepare a way for him, to give his people the knowledge of salvation through the forgiveness of sins. Because of the tender mercies of our God, by which the rising sun will come to us from heaven, to shine on those living in darkness and in the shadow of death. Listen to this bit. And he will guide our feet into paths of peace. Zechariah was singing that John would be the precursor of Jesus, which he was, and Jesus would be the one who would lead us into paths of peace. He would guide us into paths of peace. The word that she was there for guide is katathuno, and it's the idea of a pilot who joins a ship. Yeah, I might say to me, well, pilots work with planes, not with ships. True. But for some ports, there are people who are called pilots. And before the ship comes into port, the pilot will go out and join the ship. And the idea is the pilot is somebody who will assist in guiding that ship into the port because they know the tides, they know the waters, they're intimately familiar with the whole setup of the port. They know where rocks are, they know what places to avoid, they know the best path. And the pilot who comes aboard the ship can guide that ship safely to shore. And what John was going to do was introduce Jesus, who would be the one who would come and offer himself as our pilot to peace. He would be the one who would guide us into peace. What a picture. The Messiah would come to lead us into peace. In times of worry, in times of anxiety, In times of despair, in times of grief, we have someone who can pilot us to peace. He has an intimate knowledge of the situation. He knows the best way to navigate through these difficult, turbulent, tricky waters. Jesus himself said in John 14:27, "Peace I leave with you, my peace I give you. I do not give to you as the world gives. Do not let your heart be troubled, and do not be afraid." Why? Because the pilot can be on board. We can still worry, but it's pointless. We can be disturbed, but why? We can fear, but there is no reason. He says, do not allow your hearts to be troubled. You know, when you're cooking something, you got a pan on, you go and give it a good stir around. And Jesus is saying, don't allow that to happen to your hearts. Don't allow that mixing, that stirring, that agitation to occur. Why? Because we trust the pilot. Don't be afraid, he said. And the idea there is of courage being sapped away. You know, yesterday we had the baptism. At the end of it, we had to get the water out. We did that by sticking a pump in and pumping it out. And Esther came to me, said, "Well, the water's not going anywhere. It's still there." I said, "No, if you look, because we've got the ridge pipe, you'll see how the water is gradually going down." It's the same with pulling a plug on something. It may look okay, and certainly from the top, you can't see any difference. But all the while, that is gradually going down. And Jesus is saying, do not allow your courage to be drained away. Because if we hold on to the fear, if we hold on to the distress, if we hold on to the grief, if we hold on to the anxiety, the fear will work and our courage will gradually diminish. It's not necessary. We can trust the pilot. In Psalm 107 that we read earlier, it talked about the difficulties that they had, those who were at sea. But in verses 28 to 29, it says this, "They cried out to the Lord in their trouble, and he brought them out of their distress." Paul says in 2 Corinthians 1:9, "Indeed, we felt we had received the sentence of death." When he was talking, you can imagine being out for a day and a night in the sea. Where's help coming from? "They felt they'd received the sentence of death. But this happened that we might not rely on ourselves, but on God who raises the dead." This is the Message version that I was talking about earlier. We eventually got to it. It says this, "We felt like we'd been sent to death row, that it was all over for us. As it turned out, it was the best thing that could have happened. Instead of trusting in our own strength or wits to get out of it, we were forced to trust God totally. Not a bad idea, since it's God who raises the dead." Jesus demonstrated this peace. When he was in the boat, they were going simply to the other side of the lake. Not a big issue, you got experienced fishermen. But it says that a squall came. And it tells us that these experienced fishermen were actually terrified. They thought the boat would be swamped and it would go down. They were in great danger and they knew it. They woke him and they said, "Master, we are going to drown." The disciples weren't wimps. Admittedly, you got some who were tax collectors, maybe never been out on the sea much at all. But some of them were experienced fishermen, and they knew the waters well. And they were afraid. It was real danger. It was overwhelming, and there was nothing they could do about it. Jesus called them little faiths. Seems something of a pet name for the disciples. they can't do this, that's because of the little faiths. And he spoke to the wind and the waves, but it seems almost as if he expected them to do something about it themselves. And the storm was settled, and they were delivered. But you know, there are times when the storm does not cease. There are times when we are called to go through the storm. Jesus himself in Matthew 26, 39 to 44, Garden of Gethsemane, cries out to his Father, "If this cup can pass from me, please take it away. But not what I want, what you want." And he had to endure the cross. We spoke earlier of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. They stood up to the king and said, "Look, we're not going to do this. We're not going to bow down." And then they made an interesting statement. They said, "The God we serve is able to deliver us from you. But even if he doesn't, we're not going to bow down to the image." Now, it's not fatalism. It's courageous faith. If you want a more modern example, there's a thing called the Red Terror, and it occurred in Russia in sort of mid to late 1918s after the First World War, where the Bolsheviks took over and were imposing communism on the Russian people. They were against any group or individual that was a threat to their rule. And what they, quite rightly in some senses, thought were the priests who oversaw Christianity could be major problems for them because they wanted total control. So their solution was quite simple. We'll kill them all. And there was a wood that was set aside for this purpose. And the story is told that they would line the priests up in two rows, one behind the other. And they would make sure that the priest who was behind was in a certain position. And they would go to a priest in front and say, "Do you believe in God?" If the reply was yes, he was shot in the head. But he was shot in such a way that as the bullet went through and everything came out the back, it would splatter onto the priest behind. So he knew what was coming. And they would simply work their way down the line. Apparently, there were thousands, perhaps even tens of thousands, executed in this way. Not just priests. But the idea was that if you remove the priests, the faith would collapse. Ordinary Christians no longer had leaders, so they would simply not believe anymore, because the Bolsheviks thought that religion was the opium of the people. It simply controlled them. So get rid of the priests, no problem. But what they found instead is it made the Christians stronger. Ordinary Christians were inspired to stand against communism, and many suffered for their faith. There were others, but Christians were at the head of the counter-revolution. There were various outbreaks. Hungary in 1956, Czechoslovakia in 1968, and they were put down ruthlessly. But in 1985, starting in Poland, there was the counter-revolution, where communism was thrown off. And in 1989, there was the Velvet Revolution in Czechoslovakia, a peaceful revolution where people simply stood in the streets and would not go. Many of the people who were there were Christians. They stood in the face of overwhelming situation, perhaps with fear in their hearts, but they overcame the fear. Because the fact of the matter is, we can be overwhelmed, but we are under God. as I say, it's not blind fatalism, you know, the que sera, sera, whatever will be, will be. Nothing we can do with it, so just get on and accept it as it is. It's not blind optimism either. Oh, well, something will work out, something will turn up, something will happen. It's faith because we're asking the pilot to take control of our lives and steer us through. It's peace because we know that he has our ultimate best interests at heart. And it's praise because we can bless the God who comes and gives us his peace and steers us through to eternity. In the face of overwhelming situations, it's putting our hand in his and trusting him to see us through. It is a case of turning to him and saying, God, my life is in your hands. I will trust you and I will praise you. It is saying in many ways, hallelujah, anyway. Amen. We've got a song to basically emphasize this point for you. Have a listen.